Caruso, and welcome to Tales Wales, the pod that never fails to finally follow through on its threats. And for once, despite saying this about probably a year or 2 years ago, we finally decided to become our own stalwarts, the defenders of our word, and decided to do an episode based on the world's best film, Zulu. And before anyone says anything, I'm a Patreon for Finn vs. History, a really funny podcast. Guess what they're doing next week on their Patreon?
Oh, this is fucking Ellis James all over again. Why can't we find someone we love who doesn't betray us?
No. So for reference, when we started our podcast, our Welsh history based podcast, like a couple of weeks later, Ellis James did the exact same thing.
Love Ellis James. I mean, I still do love him, but it's like we were like, oh, thanks, mate, for the fucking needle in the back. And just as we were pulling that fucking stiletto from the back of my lung, we're like, oh, Finn versus History, that's a great little new podcast. And he went, I'm going to do Zulu Boys at the same exact fucking time you're doing it.
So next week, we're recording this before he actually did it. And this has been in our fucking diary for ages. But yeah.
Listen, actually, we've done it before, okay?
But it was quite funny. I was like, do you know what? We're finally come around to doing it. And then I got an email yesterday saying, next week, Finn vs. History is doing the Zulu film. I was like, are you fucking kidding? But anyway, we're doing it from a Welsh perspective.
It's been a long time coming. We have been taught. I like that you called it a threat as well at the start. If you had any reverence for the film, it's about to be fucking desecrated now. Yeah. But you know, we have been saying to do this for fucking since almost day dot, I'd say.
Yeah, probably at least 18 months we've been threatening to do a film review around Zulu. We were going to do a watch along.
Circa COVID, mate, definitely.
We were going to do a watch along, weren't we? But we just thought that might be a bit. You could just hear us go, oh, yeah, cool. I love this bit.
In silent appreciation, going, oh, sick, bro. Sick. For about, I don't know, was it 2 hours?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just swallowed beer the wrong way around. Oh, it's sort of gone down horribly.
Down the lungs. Come on for me. No way to go. No way to go. But yes, we have decided that we just watch it separate. Make some notes, and we're going to have a little discussion about it. Make some allusions to the historic elements as well to
and
keep
focus
up this
on the
facade
Welsh.
That we're a historical podcast of some kind.
And we'll focus on the Welsh element more than but then I'm sure Finn will.
That's our USP.
But before we get into my top five films of all time, should we discuss our new Patreon system and how that's going to work?
Yes, so we've devised some new little treats for you all to keep you interested and available to us.
Shall I do this bit?
I tried to get the Excel sheet up, right? And my Chrome has gone absolute. It's lost all its RAM. Is that a term? Anyway, we're back. Yeah. I'm back in, right? I found it now. So yeah, as you all know, if you join the Patreon, right, if you're the £5 tier, you have the Jibber Jabber, you get 2 episodes extra a month, some little bonus bad boys. If you do the Taily tier, which is £10 a month, you get the bonus episodes, plus you get personalized album art after a month. 3 months in, you get dedicated episode to your hometown. 6 months in, we turn you into a Welsh legend, make you into like a Mabinogion sort of hero. It's all very good.
Episode we did, the last hometown one, was really fun. We've got into a good rhythm now of where we'll find a little bit of history, but then we'll just have a laugh. You know, we'll just have a bloody
laugh. It's the classic blend. It's the classic blend you've grown to love. But we've decided now, this is fixed now. As I said before we recorded, it is set in stone, okay? 12 months in now. We will make you your own coat of arms. We'll take 3 traits from you and we'll give you like a Welsh slogan, you know, like a bit like Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
where you
well, have Game
like
of Thrones.
Your, Game of Thrones. It. We have
dead,
like your little, your house slogan, a Lannister always pays his debts or whatever. And then after 18 months, you get a freebie bit of merch as well.
Yeah, so we'll send out over your T-shirt to you. Oh, I have to realize
the T-shirt of your selection.
Yeah, well, a Mabinogion. A Tales for Wales T-shirt. So if you didn't know, we have T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to like, oh, I want a Balenciaga, please. No, you can't have that. You can have one of our little things, okay?
Yeah, so we worked with the amazing Chris IT, and we have Chris a IT, Tales for Wales
baby
search.
Boy.
Yeah. So yeah, it's 18 months, you'll get that. And then on top of that, we decided we're going to trial. We thought, you know, times are tough at the moment.
You're thinking, you guys have been too generous already. Guess what? We got more strap in with it, Franco. Yeah.
We just said, we thought, you know, times are tough at the moment and money's like, you know, tight. So we really appreciate people who help support the podcast because we're a listener supported podcast. We don't do ads. We just have listener sponsorship. We've decided to do like a summer sale. So for everyone who's currently on there over June and July, we'll do half price. So if you're on the top tier, you'll pay a fiver. If you're on the second tier, you'll pay £2.50. There is also another tier where you pay £1 a month just to be kind and you get access to the Patreon, but that stays the same because 50p you could be asked to change that. But yeah, so
it's not worth the effort it would take to go through the admin, all right? So
for the top two tiers, so if you're paying £10 a month, you'll be paying £5, and if you're paying £5 a month, you'll be paying £2.50. And if you want to join during those months, you'll be paying the same, so you'll pay £5 and £2.50. So yeah, so for the summer, everyone gets half price.
Just think about it. You can have two extra episodes a month, plus artwork, plus your hometown episode, plus a Mabinoxen episode for less than a bloody pint. Less than a pint.
Pint think where? About it. It's not really, because you'd have to pay that for 3 months.
try finding a pint for cheaper than a fiver these days, am I right, mate?
But you'd have to get the episode. You have to
a pint every month. I mean, come on.
Sorry, I'm such a pedant. No, that's not right, actually. No, you've got that
actually
wrong.
If you tally up the pints over time, you know what I'm saying. Come on.
Yes. And then you also get access to all the previous episodes on there. So when you join now, you get access to the Patreon that's been running for about a year now, probably.
And if you were me, what you do is sign up during this period, listen to everything, and then fucking dip out. Yeah. I wouldn't even judge you if you did that, because that's what I do. And I'd be thankful for that 1 month you joined. But well, I hope you don't. I hope we convince you.
You'd be like
that,
me,
that it's worth
someone
it.
Who supports the arts. And yes, we are artists, because that's what the director said last week. Director Dan said what we do is artistic. So because we're podcasters, we are artists. All right,
simple as that. Yeah,
not my
okay,
words.
Guys.
Yeah. Also,
a professional, a film professional, called us that.
That episode was so good. I just finished editing it yesterday, and I was like, oh, it's a banger.
It's a great one. I don't know why I'm saying like, oh, listen out for that. You would have heard it by this
you
point.
You would have heard it by now.
Yeah. The miracle of post-production. Yeah.
Yeah. So should we start with our Zulu?
Let's get on with it. We're not doing any preamble. That's it, is it? Done.
Well, do you have any preamble? What's your preamble?
I was going to say, I've just recovered from shingles.
You fucking horrible leper. Yeah. You're an absolute leper.
I can't believe it. Like, an absolute old soul just like getting shingles
gout.
In my fucking 30s. Yeah, gout. Fucking, what's the one with me? Lack of vitamin C on the high seas. Scurvy, yeah. Amongst the same like sort of category of illness, isn't it? Like, yeah, so for the listeners, I just came about with a horrendous rash. I looked like a fucking leper on my arm, right? Went up my neck, went all over my bod. I was about to say hot bod, especially not afterwards. And then the docs fucking diagnosed it as shingles.
Googled it. It looks fucking disgusting.
Mate, it's rank, right? It was really like, it looked a bit like heat rash, like very condensed heat rash at first, right? And this is a bit sick now. After a while, all those little like dots, those red dots, they turn into blisters.
That's disgusting.
I cannot tell you how bad the itching is. It's like torture. Like, my dog, right, was eating this little bone thing, this little nylon bone, right? And he's chewed it so much, it's like ragged and sharp right on the end. I picked it up to put it away because he was getting too excited with it. And I was like, my God, if I just took that to town on my arm now, that would feel so good. Like, that's how desperate I wanted to rip my skin off. It's awful. So anyone who's any old shingalos out there like me...
It's contagious. Didn't your wife was it? If you were my husband, I'd have thrown you in the fucking cellar with this.
This is the thing, right? It's contagious, but you can't catch shingles off someone. You can only catch chicken pox off someone with shingles. But if you've had chicken pox before, you can't get it. So she was fine.
Have you never had chicken pox?
Yeah, yeah. What it is, it's the same disease as chicken pox that you have when you're a kid, but it resurfaces, apparently because of stress, right? I don't feel like I'm that stressed, but I had a talk with my line manager, and she was like, a blind man could see you're stressed. And all this sort of stuff. I was like, oh, okay.
That's never a good sign then, when you're bossing you.
No, but it's mad that, like, I said to Amy, I was like, I mask any frustration in work, right? Yeah. You know me, I'm a pretty chilled guy anyway, so it takes a lot to get me fucking angry.
To irk you.
Yeah. So, like, I'm thinking, Jesus, what am I doing in work that is, like, that's setting these alarm bells off for my line manager when I'm like, yeah, no worries, I'll get that sorted, thanks, Lynette. And then it's like,
oh, he's stressed.
Oh my God, he's over the edge. No wonder he's got shingles.
No wonder he's got the most disgusting disease I've ever seen in my life. Did Amy
I've still got it on my arm now. I'm looking at it right now, right? And it's way more palatable than it was before, but... Bless her, Amy. She did do a very good job of acting like I wasn't fucking disgusting. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, blisters. That's all I imagine. Like, people in the medieval time were just covered in constantly.
Yeah. Just blisters is what you get when you boils. Get burnt. Imagine that.
It's bubbling just, boils. Grim. It is quite grim, actually.
Absolute itchy blisters. It's not great. So, yeah, anyone who's been to shingles, hit us up. Tell us your experience, yeah.
But you went away, didn't you, for your, like... wedding anniversary.
Well, that's it, yeah, because we booked it and I didn't want to let anyone down or anything. I was on the mend by then. I got some meds. I was on 6 pills a day to try. I think the docs tried to fucking nuke this, whatever it was. And yeah, it was fine because we were in like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it was like, we went to this pub then that was like right next door to us. And we're desperate to go there. Well, I was desperate to go there. But I didn't want, like, my grossness to be on show. Yeah. So, like, I wore... It was... I looked like such a weirdo because it was hot. I had my shorts on, but I also had, like, a full-on shirt, like, down to the cuffs on my wrist because I wanted to hide everything.
Yeah. Did anyone say, oh, freak,
freak, disgusting freak? No, I drank so much the itching faded. It was great. Yeah. It was fine.
That's what the doc prescribed. A couple of crates.
Oh, first thing I said, we said, oh, here's some antivirals and some antihistamines. First thing I googled, can I drink on these things?
Yeah, you can pretty much drink on
it's all fine. You can even antibiotics you can drink on them. It's not good for you, but you can.
And, also, they used to say that a lot because that was associated with like syphilis and STDs. So they'd say you can't drink because most people would get STDs when they were drunk. So a lot of it was like to reassure, like, you weren't having drunk sex.
Also, woke conspiracy nonsense, as I always say.
It's just, I'm pretty just sure it's the woke hierarchy trying to hold us back from syphilis.
Woke mind virus, anyone?
You've got enough viruses at the moment.
Well, exactly, No, it was, but I'm on the road to recovery now, it was great. The one thing I will say is the antihistamines they gave me, they were strong.
They knock you out, don't they?
I've never really had them before because I haven't got hay fever in this, so I've never battled with an antihistamine before. Fuck me, it was weird though. It wasn't like they instantly made me tired or anything. It would be in bouts, so like, I don't know, half an hour in, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Like, my eyes could barely keep them open.
You were off work, weren't you?
No, I still came to work. Stupid. Why did I do that?
I know, that's you've got like the
and me as well.
That's the least work ethics I've anyone have ever met.
it's absolute anti me. I don't know, it must be all the med. The histamines were like, I'd be like, I couldn't keep my eyes open for like, I don't know, 20 minutes. And then once I got through it, I was like, I'm fine. And then it'd be like another half an hour later, oh my God, I want to go to sleep again. So when we were away, I was taking them. Oh my God.
No, seriously. I fucking seriously, bro. I really want to go to bed.
No. You're not listening. Really want to go to bed.
I fucking tired.
The classic I pull is Amy, we're like, we'll go to sleep. And I was like, well, I'm going to stay up in bed drinking, watching my YouTube or whatever. Mm. Oh, it was like, oh, night then. I was like, great. Now I've got carte blanche to do what I want. Off I go.
You like, say literally. Blanche, like her name, like she's an auntie Blanche. You
said Blanche, like from Kari.
Well, you said Blanche.
Blanche.
Blanche. You're talking to a man who's on day 500 of his Duolingo in La Francais.
Well.
Je suis pretty girl. Et toi? Ça va bien, merci. Oh, bof.
That is quite good, to be fair. I just know, I remember bof. I recognize that.
Bof always reminds me of you.
Like, is that shit?
It's like,
is bof shit?
It's, you know, okay.
I thought comsi comsa was like...
Yeah, it is.
It's like, eh, I'm all right. Bof is like, oh, shit.
it's like meh. So...
Meh.
Yeah, it's like bof is
what an advanced
meh.
Language,
yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, meh is a stupid word as well. Meh. Bof. Sister de bon.
Comparing an age-old language like French. Remember that modern thing? Meh is exactly the same.
Yeah, right. Well, if that's your horrible, grubby anecdote.
Yeah.
Can we get on to something more civilized?
If you join the Patreon, you can see some pics of my gross
anecdote. Oh, no. Do you have any pics of it? Because I do kind of want
to. Yeah. Because the doctor told me to take pics to monitor how much it's growing. I cannot tell you how fast it grew. It was like the fucking scarabs and the mummy. I think we made that joke to each other.
And I went, la, la, la.
At one point,
you dropped the old homage Jaleel.
Yeah. Brendan Fraser came over, stuck a knife in my fucking arm, and popped it out. Yeah.
Looks like we got all the scarabs on my skin.
Looks like, yeah. Looks like I got all the scabies.
Right. Well, anyway, from one disgusting human to. Actually, there's no one quite. Everyone in this film's brilliant. What could the link be?
From the most disgusting thing you've ever heard of to the best thing you've ever heard of.
From one ancient, from one archaic disease to an archaic battle. I suppose it's not really archaic to be 1879. But anyway, we get the gist. It's good enough. We thought we'd do a quick, like, concise summary, a little roundup of... we're not doing an episode based on... Battle of Rorke's Drift, which is what Zulu's based on. We're going to do this episode on the film, so we're not going to focus too much on the details. But I thought because you haven't seen it,
And
I thought it'd be helpful to give you an overview of what the battle's about. So it happened in January
2020. It's literally 5 years ago. Yeah. Big deal. You probably haven't heard of it. Yeah.
It happened on January 22nd to 23rd in 1879. And the location was Rorke's Drift, which was a mission station in Natal province, which is now South Africa. And it's part of the Anglo-Zulu War. So the forces involved, there's about 100. So also, I'll talk about this in a second. But the British forces, I say British here, but in the film it portrays it as a lot more Welsh. But the British forces, 150 soldiers, mainly from the 24th Regiment of Foot, which later becomes the South Wales Borderers. The Zulu forces were 3,000 to 4,000 warriors. So 150 soldiers versus 3,000 to 4,000 warriors. And the background is the battle occurred right after the British suffered this massive defeat at the Battle of Isandlwana. I'm probably saying that awfully. Isandlwana, Asandlwana. So there's actually a second film called Zulu Dawn.
Which
focuses on the battle where there was proper...
A hell of a like what comparison to modern cast, if you like. That's got like Bob Hoskins in it.
It's from the 80s, isn't it? The Battle of Isandlwana was like a proper battle where there was an entire regiment and all that stuff. But the Zulus battered them, and a big part of it was the soldiers couldn't unlock their bullets. They were in like boxes of wood, and they didn't have crowbars to get the ammo out. And that's kind of alluded to in the film where they have tin foil to get the ammo out down in the barracks. They got battered. But this isn't about that battle. This is about Rorke's Drift. And so what happened is vastly outnumbered British defenders fortified this mission station using like mealie bags and biscuit boxes. And then the Zulus, this like 4,000 Zulus, launched multiple fierce attacks over 12 hours, including a lot of hand-to-hand combat. But the defenders held firm and eventually repelled the Zulus, who withdrew by the morning. So the outcome was, it was a British victory. There was only 17 British soldiers killed with 10 wounded, and there was around 500 Zulus killed.
That's mad, isn't it?
11 Victoria Crosses, which is the most that's ever been handed out, and it's the highest military honour you can get in a battle. And it's the most ever handed out at one time. So 11 Victoria Crosses were handed out to 11 members of the 150 soldiers. And it became like this big symbol of like British bravery and endurance. I mean, there was, they still had guns and the Zulus didn't, which I always think is a bit fucking...
You do have to take factor that in. It's a, it's a bit of a force multiplier, isn't it, when you've got gunnies on the go.
And then just for like the Welsh contingent of it, because Wales plays a big part in this film, the defenders mainly came from B Company, which is the 2nd Battalion of the 24th Regiment of Foot, which was based in Brecon, Wales at the time. Although the regiment we had so that's got a really strong link, Welsh link to it. The British Army recruited from all over, so it was a mix of like people from the Midlands, lots of English, Irish, and Welsh soldiers. So the exact number of Welshmen involved in the defence is debated, but it's roughly around a quarter of the 150 were specifically from South Wales.
Yeah, it saddens me to say, but the Welsh aspect is it's sort of hyped up in the film a lot more.
Well, I actually don't know if it is. I just think you focus on the Welsh soldiers. I actually don't think it's... Because when I rewatched it, I was like, actually...
There's maybe, I want to say, four, five actual Welsh people you sort of hear... But it's the film is certainly focused on it, and it makes it seem as though they're like a bigger like Welsh contingent.
And also after the war, I think actually it's not just the film. I think it's the people in the zeitgeist after the film came out started attributing it to being a Welsher film, because the film because Stanley Baker plays the lead, who's a Welshman. But some facts around it.
Steve Burton narrates as well. Yeah. I realised that as well. That's it. To be fair, what else? What other films do we have? Not Steve Burton. What do I mean?
Richard Burton.
Jesus. Who's Steve Burton?
He's an American television actor, apparently, who looks like he's from. He's in General Hospital.
That's who I meant. The guy from General Hospital.
Richard Burton, one of the best actors of all time.
Yeah. Who's a Welshman. Sorry. Yeah. Richard Burton narrates it at the very start and at the end.
Yeah. But a reason why this. It's attributed to being a bit Welsh as well, or a bit of a Welsh like triumphant film, is that regiment got officially renamed after this war to the South Wales Borderers. So that kind of cements it in part of like Welsh history and Welsh identity. So that's the background. Really, really, it's a classic My Favourite Film, where it's a siege film. They're really outnumbered. The scenery and all that stuff is just so fucking cool. It has like medieval weapons, like shields and spears, but then it's also got like cool looking guns. I don't like guns really, but these would look cool. They just look so satisfying and like,
you know, when it was back when it was like, it's kind of, yeah, you said satisfying, like they're like
one shot at a time,
one shot rifles. You gotta, you know, it's not like a machine gun type thing, is it?
It's
a little bit more level playing field, I guess, than having like a proper mini gun on the go.
Yeah, and a part of it was the Zulus retreated when they could have. They lost like what is 500 out of 4,000? That's probably like an eighth.
Apparently, it was closer to 800 if you include the wounded.
All right, yeah. But they also withdrew out of a sign of respect, because this 150 soldiers weren't really that important, but it was like a chance to just be, you know, fucking, because you forget that the British are invaders, so it's a chance for the natives to be like, well, fuck you, we're going to get rid of all these fucking invaders. Yeah. Because they fought so bravely, the Zulu warriors respected that, and they have like they did a sign of retreat to be like, fucking that. Because
it's a warrior culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big warrior culture, and they could have. So a war party is called an impi, a Zulu impi, and they decided to pull off, even though they could have absolutely wiped them out by the end of it, but they were like, it's going to cost us, like, you know, extra deaths of our warriors. Yeah.
Would it be worth losing that many men?
And there's a bit of respect given to how hard they defended. So, should we go on to what we thought of the film?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, no surprises here. Both of us absolutely love this film. Yeah, I think I watched it my first time I ever watched it. I think my granddad showed it to me. When I was probably a bit too young to understand it fully. I think I might have been about like 11 or something like that. And like, I probably liked it, but like really didn't get like, you know, when you just at that age, you probably don't get the gravitas of films very much.
Yeah.
And then it was only till when I watched it later, I was like, oh, this is so good. And then rewatching it, I don't think I've watched it in a good few years. Probably I might have been in my late teens the last time I watched it, actually. I know you probably watched it a lot more recent than me.
I grew up watching it. I used to watch it before school when I was in primary school, which is mental. I used to
get you fucking primed for school.
I used to, because it was like one of the few videos we had. It was recorded off the telly, and my granddad loved it as well. And I used to watch it before catching the bus when I was in primary school as well. It was before I was in year five, because I remember, like, I was thinking, shit, I hope I can still watch this when I have to do real work in year five and six, which is when you start getting exams. So I was like, how old was I? Like 10, maybe like seven years old. I used to watch it every morning. I'd watch parts of it and then pause it.
Oh, I was gonna say the whole thing. It's like over 2 hours.
No,
like,
so
right.
I just fast forward to the fights. I used to just do that a lot. So just like fast forward to the fights, and I used to and it was like absolutely my favorite film, and it like defined the kind of films I went on to love. But it's also throughout my life it's had cultural importance. Like, it's a big Cardiff City song, even though I'm not a huge Cardiff City supporter, but it's when you go watch them play, they sing Men of Harlech. I'm a massive Welsh football fan, so whenever Wales play,
one of like the, think of another film that has such a like a Welsh presence.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Yeah. And the film itself is from the 60s, so it's like it's before Wales became a lot more culturally recognised. Mm. But also, like, just the songs from there, Men of Harlech, they sing that at Welsh football games, and it evokes such like passion and pride. But should we go? I was going to talk a little bit about the scenes, just some of my favourite scenes.
Definitely. That's what I've noted down as well, mate. So,
do you want to hit me?
You go first.
All right, okay. Because mine's actually about the opening scene. So I think the opening scene is just so well shot, and the camera quality is outstanding. You couldn't believe this is from the 60s.
Stands up so well. Like, doesn't you know it? What? When I saw it, I was like, this looks like it's been, I would say, shot in like the late 70s.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like, oh, that's old, but considering it was done in the 60s.
Yeah, early 60s.
It's so, like, I think ahead of its time.
And
I'd say
it's filmed on location. So they went to South Africa to film this. So they took the crew in the 60s with all their stuff. And it's so immersive. Like, at the very start of it, the opening scene of like this ritualistic dancing between the Zulu warriors and their wives and brides, and all the men are on one side with spears and all the girls are on the other, and they're dancing and singing, and I just like I thought it looks amazing, but I kept thinking how funny it would be if I was there, like just a pasty white person, like beer belly, confused, and all these like, I couldn't be less of a Zulu in every single way.
No,
I only work out my arms and shoulders. And all these like, I kept thinking I'm
doing
like some
the old
white
dancing,
pig.
Like, yeah,
I got no rhythm, your number. And they just call me like some white pig devil. Just like that's what like,
the old white pig devil, pig heart boy,
because also they didn't employ actors for the Zulus, so the Zulus are all genuine Zulus and Zulu warriors, and it's during apartheid. I'll talk a little bit about that later, but. But because they're not actors, you completely lose yourself in the reality of it, because they're not acting. They didn't have acting.
That's their genuine shit. Like,
it's just their genuine stuff. And I was like, I love it. I really, really enjoyed it.
So it's great.
I love that opening scene.
Yeah. Oh, I really like the sort of the very first, not the bit where the priest, is it a priest or like missionary, whatever he's called?
Give me the wagons! Give me the wagons!
The bit before that, where it's you're at the aftermath of that battle of what did you call it?
Isandlwanda.
You're the aftermath of that, and all you see is like this sort of like devastation of the British, and then you see the Zulu guy. A Zulu guy picks up, I think he picks up one of the guns.
He picks
the guns,
and he points it,
and he goes, and then he shouts something at that, and then the title card comes in, and it's like, that's fucking sick, man. That's
it's
like
so
just
good.
To set the sort of precedent. It's really, really good.
I kept singing after, hey, I've been singing that for ages.
Bordering on racism, man.
No, that's the song. That is, they when they're getting their, bridal
I thought
thing.
They were singing actual words just in a language we don't speak.
No, I'm pretty sure it's vocal. It's hey, we can drop it in here.
Turn yourself out, mate. Yeah.
It's the amount of fake
you're probably right.
The amount of fake the fake Zulu singing that I do on this is, whilst it's going on, there's that amazing scene we'll talk about later, and we'll drop it in. We'll have to drop it
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Part. I was say, that's not, actually, it's a spoiler. It's been out for fucking years, but yeah.
60 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, my other thing I loved was, I love they capture this amazing sense of the soldiers not necessarily knowing why they're fighting. So, like, when they have, like, a bunch of Welshmen there who care more about the cattle, and they discuss, like, because they're on this, like, station outpost, and they're discussing how nothing grows in this acrid land and how they thought he wanted to go there for a bit. He didn't even, like, make a big deal of it. It was, like, a throwaway comment. He was like, oh, I thought I'd want to come here for the glory, but he misses farming up in Connolly. He's like, he misses his homeland, and he's much more focused about the animals. And then he's like, he doesn't quite understand why he's there.
And
why
he's the invaded one, another country. I can't think of his bloody name now. But there's
Jones,
like
local Jones.
It's the one where the main, he ends up being the sort of the commanding officer. He's the engineer. Chad, and he's there to build a bridge, basically. And there's that other Welsh guy. I'm so bad at the fucking names, but he's like, "What are you doing there, soldier?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm waiting for my my top tenor."
Yeah.
And basically, the guy is there just waiting there because he's the only other guy who can sing in the same sort of quality as him. But he's in charge. He's been assigned to help build this bridge, and he's just waiting on the side. And it's this idea of, like, it gives a very good sense of, like, this is kind of a DOS outpost, and like these guys are not the elite, you know what I mean? These guys have sort of been sent there to just
hold this
post. They're not soldiers, really.
None of them are. Like, so Chad is the officer in charge, who's played by Stanley Baker. It's his first time being in a battle, and he takes command of it and stuff, and it's like,
I know this is like skipping my head, but you know what I loved about it is that on rewatch, you don't know it's his first battle until right at the end, where Michael Caine's character says it's his first battle, and he's a bit traumatized by it, and he says, like,
"Is it always like this?" And he's like, "Do you think I can stomach this more than once?"
He says, "Do you think I can stomach this butcher's yard more than once?" And I was like, "Oh, that's such a good line. That's such a good line."
Yeah, it's a banger. One of the other things I really liked was the director was like clearly critical of like British colonial past, and they have like this. They bring in a Boer soldier who's like a white South African who helps them defend against the Zulus, and he states that the Zulu are his blood enemies. He's like, and but Michael Caine says, the director makes a purposeful point of saying, like, well, what the hell are you doing here? Like, when they're on about fighting, the Boer soldier says, "These are my blood enemies," and he turns to Michael Caine and says, "What are you English doing here?" Like, he's critical of the fact that they invaded and tried to take over, like, Zulu
land. It's quite it's more progressive than you'd think.
Well, I'll come to the facts.
The
facts are amazing about this film, which I'll come to later on. But there's loads of stuff. Because at the time, this is all filmed during apartheid. So there's loads of apartheid laws that got in the way of filming, which I'll talk about that later. But I just love it. Like, I love it when films are they do a message that sometimes isn't so fucking blatant, but it's just a little.
Yeah, it's a bit more subtle, isn't it? Yeah. You know, like you said, like we just said then with the Chad saying, like, "Do you think I'd choose to be in this butcher's yard again?" You know, it's like that thing of when war is hell, like
the classic
theme that is in a lot of war films. But this is, that's almost the only thing you get from Chad to be like, "Oh my god, this is fucking horrible! Like, I don't want to be here again." You know?
Yeah, and they built this amazing set. They burn the set and it all looks fucking. The sounds of the fires ripping through, it looks amazing.
Looks fantastic. The sound design is, because I'm assuming they just filmed it burning down for real.
Live.
And it just sounds amazing.
The sound in all of it is fantastic. Like
the train shots and the rifles and stuff, man. Yeah. When they do the sort of
reload, aim, fire.
Front end, back end, front end, back end, like that. Oh, it's so good.
They have
so
this
good
system where they have a line of gunmen at the front on their knees, then some behind them, and then when one reloads, the people behind fire, then they move forward, and the people behind them stop reloading, they move forward. Fire!
It looks
fire,
incredible.
Fire. Let's drop that sound
The sound design is great,
Let's drop that clip in here.
up, buddy!
I also think I love the character of Hooky is like, and he's a true character. He's like, because in this station post, they have a bunch of sick hospital people. And Hooky's below there for like kind of in prison because he's like a criminal or like a deserter.
He's made out to be a bit of a delinquent, baddie. Isn't he? Like, yeah. Not a great soldier, yeah.
Yeah, and he looks a bit like Bill Sykes. I'm not sure if it's the same actor. No, it can't be the same actor because Bill Sykes is a famous actor. But it's yeah, Oliver Reed played Bill Sykes in Oliver.
But
he has that kind of look about him, and he's a bit of a drunk, and he's like a cockney, and he's proper. I just think he's so cool. Like when all this war's going on, he's not us. He's like still gambling away and stuff.
He's asking people to get him the brandy and stuff.
Yeah. And then when he does get into the fight, and he's trying to help his like the sergeant who's like gone mad, and he's there like he gets his like. His bayonet and he's like yeah he's jabbing away and he takes control of the hospital and then he's all like becomes his hero. Then all of a sudden he sees booze in the cabinet and then when he drinks he just looks like his eyes get puffy and his face is sweating and he becomes like just it's like in One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest it says the bottle drinks from him, like he just sees like he becomes like he's getting nothing from the booze and the booze is taking over. I just thought, oh, it looks fucking, it's such a good. All of it, all the aspects of the film, all of a sudden it becomes like a character piece about one guy who's an alcoholic and he's in this war zone.
He also does have that, one of his earliest lines in the film, if not his first, I think, is where he's in this hospital, like Frank said, and there's a guy beneath him who's like been injured and he's got like clearly like got PTSD.
Yeah, well, that's like his sergeant, his old sergeant who's gone mad.
It's his old sergeant, and he's saying something like that, and he absolutely whacks him with like a belt full of like metal and goes, "Shut up, you cribble." And it's like one of the first things there, like, "Oh, right, okay."
Yeah, the baddies here.
Establish the character from here on out, yeah.
I also
he's a great character the classic he has this redemption arc, isn't he, of course,
but then he just like I love Colour Sergeant Bourne he's like the most dad, like if you wanted to have a nice dad he would be like the perfect dad, well, wouldn't he? Because he's like
we were
scary
talking about
stern.
This right I watched this on Saturday, right? Yeah. So this will be inconsequential to everyone listening because it's like it'll be 2 weeks ago to you, but we were texting, me and the boys, including Frank's now, we were texting the group about what we're doing. I said, I'm watching Zulu or whatever. And our mate Sean texts a picture of Colour Sergeant Bourne and was like, I wish I had this guy like telling me what to do in life. And it's so
that's
true.
That's your boy now. Yeah,
he's an absolute daddy. Well done, sir. Well done, boy.
Like when they have this like, priest there, he's portrayed a little bit as the bad guy, but he's there trying to be a peacekeeper. He's like, he wants the British to stop.
Well, apparently, he wasn't nearly as much as like a kind of pacifist or whatever in real life.
Apparently,
he was willing to fight with the men. He only fled, right? He was one of the guys, you know, in the film where they send the guys up onto the hill and they say, keep an eye out for the Zulus, right? Yeah. He was sent up with them. Oh, and when he spotted the scale of them, because he had a wife and children, you know, in the film,
it's his daughter's
there, but in real life, his daughter and his wife were in a different settlement a bit further down.
Yeah.
Where apparently, when he saw them on the hill, he said, "I can't stay here and defend. I'd love to, but like, I gotta go back to my family." And he took a horse and he legged it.
Oh, really?
I mean, that's not. I wouldn't say cowardice. I'd probably do the same. If I'm honest, I wouldn't be there fucking defending against.
But they don't make him out to be a coward in the film. They make him out to be, he wants peace over them all fighting. Because at the start, he's with the Zulus and he's like,
well, he wants them all to leave, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Before they arrive, but apparently the reason they like everyone in the camp, apparently in real life, wanted to leave, but they knew that if they did that, they'd be slaughtered like in the open.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have a defensible position. So tactically speaking, it was no point doing that. They'd all be killed.
They said they could be chased down. And they had all the sick to carry. They had all these people in the hospital.
Exactly. It would put you in a much worse position. So the reason they stayed was at least we'll have a tiny chance here to sort of defend. Yeah.
But they portray him in the film. He's he also becomes a bit drunk. And Colour Sergeant Bourne puts him in a cabinet to lock him. And he goes, "Keep the noise down now, sir. You're scared of the troops." And so, my mate Geth.
He says Sergeant Bourne thing, doesn't he?
Bourne? He's got these massive mutton chops, these big buggery grips. Things. I love him so much. That's a good chunk.
Well, did you know, this is another thing. So I've done a few notes about what was real versus what was portrayed in the film. And so Colour Sergeant Frank Bourne, right, in the film, if anyone hasn't seen it, right, he's portrayed as a middle-aged man. He's an absolute unit of a bloke.
Yeah.
Hardened veteran type thing. In actual fact, in real life, he was of quite small stature. He was 24 years old. He was the youngest colour sergeant in the British Army.
Oh, wow.
And he was nicknamed the Kid by his men. So in real life, he was probably a lot smaller, a lot younger, but he did exactly the things. He was just as brave as they portrayed him in the film, but they just, I kind of get why maybe in the film they wanted him as a stalwart
big boy, I guess. Because everyone around him gets really fucking flustered and
he's very what's the word? The authority, isn't he? Very by the book.
Yeah. I love... So we've had he's a classic British soldier. You have Michael Caine, who's actually in charge of the area. He's in charge of the station, but he's outranked by Stanley Baker's character. But Michael Caine is they portray him as this proper posh, poncy,
bit of a prick. Yeah,
bit of a prick. And at the start of it, he's all prim and proper, and he's hunting Jaguar. And he's like, "Oh, Jaguar, yes." And he's got Zulu soldiers.
And he can't
hit him.
He can't hit it, can he? As well, he can't shoot the Jaguar.
And he's got and he's so pompous. But then at the end, he's fucking rugged. He's all his hat's everywhere. You know, he hasn't got a hat anymore. He's all covered.
And he does throw himself into the fight and stuff. Yeah. Doesn't he? He's earns his stripes.
Yeah, he's classing it. And I also, my one of the best characters is the surgeon who gets a Victoria Cross. But he goes, "Damn your chard, damn all you butchers.
Butchers, butchers,
butchers." It's just one of the films that quote the absolute most.
It's brilliant, that guy. But I will say, on rewatch, I'd completely forgotten this line, right? It's the one where there's the cook. Basically, what they say is that you've got to douse all the fires, right? He's been cooking soup all morning for the troops. And he says, "You've got to douse the fires." Why? Well, because we don't want the Zulus turning up, right? And the fires in the outer perimeter, they got access to fire. They'll just throw it onto our buildings, whatever. You've got to douse it. And then he goes, "Okay." And he escalates it to his CEO, his commanding officer. And he says, "Yeah, you know, I agree with it." And then he just it's not like he turns to the camera, but it's so almost close to that. He goes, "No one knows what it's like to cook soup around here."
they get really upset. They're so funny, those two. They do have these cute little odd moments and things around it. And one of the scenes, one of the calves is shot, and the farmer starts "Who's going to milk your mother now then?" And it's all these sad little off points in them. I don't know, so much about it is it feels incredibly every character who's in there feels quite really well thought out. And even though it's quite a big cast, they're all quite distinct characters.
Everyone gets the moment, I think, which is what's really good. Even though then, if you tallied up the minutes, I'm sure there's plenty that don't have as much as as Chard and Michael Caine. So I can't think of his bloody character's name now. But everyone gets their arc, has a beginning, middle, and end, and I think that's something that they do so well in it.
He's Bromhead is Michael Caine's character.
Bromhead, that's it. Yeah.
I thought I'd mention some of the facts about it, about the filming. So it was, like I said, it was during South Africa's apartheid racist laws, which meant, you know, black people were treated as like less than second class citizens compared to white people. And this had wide ranging effects on production. So the cast and crew were continuously reminded not to fraternize with the topless tribal dancers because the penalty for interracial sex was 7 years of hard labor. So if any of the British people fraternized with the tribal dancers, they'd get 7 years. The Zulu extras weren't allowed to be paid the same as their white counterparts. They were given like a really small amount in comparison. So the director, Enfield, he gave all the animals that were bought for the movie, particularly the cows, to the tribes. That, you know, cattle was extremely expensive, and it was a way of getting around not being able to pay them properly. But what is sad, none of the Zulu warriors were allowed to attend the premiere due to them being black.
Oh, Christ.
South Africa's Minister of Native Affairs banned the screening for any black South Africans because they worried it might incite them to rise up in revolt. The Zulu extras who were, you know, there's hundreds of Zulu extras in the films. They'd never seen a movie before. So they had trouble understanding what they were doing, playing to a camera. So they were like really confused of how like to set up the shots and redoing things and all that stuff. So Stanley Baker, the main actor, he sent to Johannesburg for silent. He went to Johannesburg and received loads of silent movies, and then he showed them all: Harold Lloyd, Stan Laurel, Oliver Hardy, Buster Keaton, and all the Zulus fucking loved it apparently. So he put on like a showing for them to show what they're doing. Yeah. And they fell about things, it was piss funny. And Stanley Baker himself, he's an activist. He's a big socialist off screen. So he's a proper big, like classic South Walian, big left wing socialist.
And Labour working class, I can totally imagine.
Yeah. And he tried to make the movie as anti-racist and as pro-Zulu as he could. And he had to be talked out of addressing a campaign for a nuclear disarmament rally in case it affected the movie's performance in the US box office. So he really wanted to campaign for nuclear disarmament, but they weren't, no, you can't, because this is going to like fuck up the box office. But he was like, and I think that comes through, like he has quite a big role in the film. And also he was like a real big part of it. I think his ethos comes into it. And the budget.
At no point in the film do you think that he's like, relish in being there, it's like foreign land, like sort of attacking people. You're in their country type thing, you know.
And but that's the act, that's the character, and I think the actor is like, they rely on a lot in that, where he's there as an engineer. He's not really meant to
be.
It comes through. It was also going to say it was a massive hit at the box office. It was made for $1.7 million, and it made $8 million. So it was considered a really big commercial success. But that was just in the box office. It's gone on to make so much in film, in DVDs, re-releases. Even the shots, like when Michael Caine's doing, when he appears in the trailer, he's like, he's got the pistol in one hand and they got the bayonets and guns behind him, and he's doing the fire, 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 you know, that
so
bit.
So good, that, yeah.
So good, isn't it?
There was another moment, you know, I said about like, it's an equal, I think it's on par with that, like no one knows what it's like to cook soup around here.
Yeah.
Right, there's another one where I think it's the same guy, actually. He goes, careful, pop that chap, somebody.
and
like someone's, it's one of the Zulus like climbing over the sandbags. He goes, careful, pop that for chap, somebody.
Good,
and someone else goes, oh, God,
chap.
Boom.
And then he gets shot in the back. Michael Caine is one of his, I think it's his first big role. He played like very small bit parts beforehand. But apparently he was crap. And when it came to the, to the auditions, he was really nervous and it came across really badly. And the director, C. Enfield, told him it was the worst screen test he'd ever seen. But the cast...
Oh, wow.
But because the cast was leaving really shortly for South Africa, they didn't have to find time to find anybody else. So he didn't want to get picked. The actor, the director was like, he's shit. So they didn't want to choose him. They ran out of time to find anyone else. So he was really fortunate because no other director was going to cast him as an officer because he was like Cockney.
So... it's almost like, you know how we say on this all the time, like, oh, the what ifs of history. In this version, say they did have time, we might not have a Michael Caine as like a sort of big time actor anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was just some of the main facts I found on, like some of the tidbits, which I always love reading up on. But it cements why I love this film even more. But we haven't even talked about the biggest part, about the Men of Harlech song and in that battle, which is probably the best use of a song, I think. And I think it's generally, if I had to like pick my top like, I don't know, five moments in cinema in history, that has to be one of them. When the Zulus, just before their like, their last big battle, the Zulus like do this really slow, like harmonal song against the Welsh.
It's very good, the British. Isn't it? It's like you'd absolutely be intimidated if you were like on
but
the
it starts off like,
receiving end of it.
It starts off like it's like a choral. It starts off like it's like you're in church. It's them doing like it's like oh, like just doing like up and down, and then they start going like aggressive and banging their shields and stuff. But beforehand, it's like really melodic, and then suddenly Baker goes, "Do you think the Welsh could do better than that?" To his like friend Owen, who's one of the other soldiers. He goes, "Think the Welsh could sing better than that?" And he goes, "Oh, they've got a beautiful bass line." But they haven't got rich tenors. Got
beautiful bass line, but no top tenors, though.
And whenever he talks about someone being shot, he talks about where they've been shot. He's like, oh, one of them was shot in the throat. And he's like, oh, it's a terrible thing for a tenor to be shot in the throat.
He'll never sing top tenor again.
But then the captain commands the Welsh to sing a retort to the Zulus who are singing their song. And he sings Men of Harlech, which is a song about how the Welsh men, either Owain Glyndŵr's soldiers or during the English Civil War, they defended Harlech. No one's quite sure exactly.
Yeah, it's sort of been co-opted, isn't it? I think in that, like that the most recent one, like you said, that it's the War of the. Would you say the War of the Roses?
Yeah. I think it's the English Civil War. It's later.
Sorry, English Civil War. Yeah. English Civil War. Yeah, that's sort of where I think the most recent version comes from. But it's like
it's a song about Welsh resistance. Either way,
it's brilliant, and the fact that Welsh men yet never yield. It's like
never yield.
It's brilliant. An
absolute banger. And then
so good.
Yeah, we'll drop that clip in here now, the whole part. All right.
Oh yeah, with the lead up with the Zulus as well, because that's like what makes it. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Can't do better than that, Owen.
Well, they've got a very good bass section, mine. But no top tenors, that's for sure.
stop your dreaming. Can't you see their spear points gleaming? See their warrior pennons streaming to this battlefield.
Sing!
Men of Palestine, be steady.
Come on, sing!
They cannot be ever steady.
I think that's a good place to pretty much wrap it up. It's 50 minutes. You know, we've gone over. Do you have anything else to add to one of the best films ever made?
I don't think so. I did have a note about, you know, Hook.
Hook.
So for those who don't who haven't seen the film, Hook is portrayed as like that we mentioned him earlier. He's kind of like he's the guy in the medical bay, and he's like he's always after some brandy, and he's a bit like of an anti-hero, and then he comes good at the end type thing, you know, and like he fights off with his men and everything. Private Henry Hook, the real Henry Hook now, was an absolutely like down the line perfect soldier. Like he was absolutely brilliant to the point where Hook's daughters, they were disgusted with the portrayal that they gave him in the film, because they were invited to the premiere. They walked out of the premiere apparently because they were so disgruntled with how like he was portrayed.
I had heard that. I think he's like, he wasn't a ruffian in real life, was he? Or like not as
no he was like an ideal soldier basically.
Well, he did get and he got the Victoria Cross.
Yeah, he got one of the, he was one of the guys who got the Victoria Cross. And there was another guy then who, do you remember him? He was portrayed as a very like stalwart officer, and he kept saying like, come on, soldier. What did he say? I can't think of the thing he said now. But basically it was him and another guy. One guy got shot in the leg. The other guy got shot.
Yeah. He come got on, shot you slovenly soldier.
Yes, slovenly soldier. That's it. Come on, you slovenly soldier. Right.
Yeah.
So that guy who was portrayed as very like authoritative and like sort of down the line sort of thing.
Yeah.
He actually wasn't a model soldier. He had actually had a history of being demoted for being drunk on duty.
So he was the Hook.
So I don't know why they didn't just say, because when asked, right, basically when asked, why did you make Hook like the drunk or whatever, like that, they said, name. Oh, look, we picked him at random, and you know, we wanted an anti-hero and all this sort of stuff. For that, it's like, man, there was one right there who actually was a drunk, you know, who could he could have done that.
I do think the name Hook is so cool, though.
It's a Hook. Yeah,
I think it's got it the guy, fits that kind
it
of
was
thing.
What's his name? The actual guy who was a drunk was Corporal William Allen. Doesn't have quite the same kind of cool ring to it, does it? Really?
No, not really. Anything else before we wrap it up?
That's my lot, mate.
Let's just see what the Rotten Tomatoes score is for Zulu. It's got to be high. If it's anything less
anything
than
less
90,
than anything less than, what would they do, out of 10 or out of 5?
It's 100 Rotten Tomato, isn't it?
Oh, 1%, yeah. Anything less than 85, 90,
no,
then that's a disgrace.
Than
90. I mean, it's a 5-star right. film for me.
But... 97 on the Tomato Meter, which is from the critics.
And
then, over with 25,000 plus reviews, it's 91% on the popcorn meter. So reviews from the general public gave it 91%, which is fucking so high.
I'd even say that's quite low.
Yeah, I'd give it 95, man. Yeah, well, it's fucking amazing.
Me and you are on Letterboxd. Follow us, by the way, guys. But it's we have it 5 out of 5. It's 5 out of 5 for me. Easy.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just epic in scale, epic in like acting, it's like epic in music,
it's a production
good.
Of quality, man. It's there's one bit again that I keep, like, when I was watching it the other day, I was like, oh my god, I just completely forgot these bits. There's a bit at the end where, again, I'm fucking shit with the name, sorry, the guy, the big daddy we want to
Colour Sergeant
thing alive, Colour Sergeant, he starts saying at the end of it, it's like when they think the fight is over, he's like, right, roll call, and he's going through the call, and it's so many people who don't answer because obviously they've been killed, and it's like, oh, that's such a good way of like showing like the devastation of, like,
and it also shows brilliant. Him that he's always so professional, like they've just gone through this hellish 24 hours and he's still there with his like button down tunic, and he's like reading he's like, and then one of them pretends to be dead, he's not really dead, he goes, Thomas, you're alive. Thomas, I've seen you. Oh, am I, sir? Okay, thank you.
Oh, also, how fucking hot would you have been in all that garb?
Oh, man.
Because like, these guys are like in fucking jumpers, essentially.
In tunics and like really
and
thick
in the middle
woolen.
Of South Africa, what is now South Africa. Jesus Christ. I'd be like, mate, I'm too hot.
They have a scene where they bring the water out. They have one point, someone has to undo his tunic, and Colour Sergeant Bourne doesn't let him because he's like, no, we're British soldiers. You have to wear your uniform. And then when that guy gets shot, he's like, can I take my tunic off now, Lord? And he's all like, he's a little cockney urchin. But they bring a scene out where they have like buckets of water and they're all like fucking gasping. And at the end of it, all their faces are covered in smoke and dry. And it just looks fucking, it's just fantastic.
The bit where he's like going like, they're quite tired, sir, actually. And he's like going, you can be tired when the fight's over, sort of thing. He's like, right you are, sir.
Right you are, sir. You know, right back at it.
Doesn't question it. He's just like absolute model soldier sort of thing. There is a kind of cool, I don't know, aesthetic to that.
Yeah.
I think like that.
Stiff upper
like
lip, the British
stiff
upper
lip, like follow orders, be a good soldier sort of thing. Yeah. Even though I know me and you would be like, fuck
I'd have fucking, I would have snaked my way out of there so quickly.
I'd be like, I'm taking my fucking tunic off, mate.
When I was younger, I was so confused when those cowboys turn up on horses at the start. Do you know when
and they fucked off,
yeah. And they're there to be like, quick, you got to get out of here. All the Zulus are coming. And they're like, yes, please stay with us. And they're on horses. Well, so they're like, no.
Well, that's another thing, right, is in real life, those guys were actually all black guys because they're local farmers. In real life. And they did stay around for the battle, but they had to retreat because their guns, they're called like cavalry carbines or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
They had different ammo to everyone else and they completely ran out. So they were all but useless, basically. So they fucked off after like halfway through the first day.
Well,
go on.
Well, just because in the film, they're like Australian cowboys who just come like galloping by, and they're like, "Fucking hell, why do you want to get out of here,
bro?"
Oh, bloody hell, you ain't believe what's around the corner. I don't really understand who they were in the film. Like, when I was younger, I was like, why are you the cowboys in this film?
They're like basically local militia. They're paid by the British crown, to basically shoot natives, which is fucking horrible. But in the film, it makes it out as if like, you're our cavalry. Oh, thank God you're here. And they're like, nah, see you, mate. I'm
off. They don't sound South African. They haven't got the most South African voices.
Even the boar doesn't sound that
fight like the horns of the buffalo.
Yeah, the horns of the buffalo.
So I met him. His name Duplessis. All right. We should probably stop. We're getting close to an hour now. All right, then. Ta-da. Ta-da.